Hello, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Prescott Daily Courier for Sunday, March 23rd, 2025. I'm Flagstaff volunteer reader Catherine Hammond. Front page articles include 3 ballot issues for August 2025 primary up for vote by Prescott Council, $46 million plan for Gurley Street site renovation, new sheriff's office gets Board of Supervisors support, the Launchpad Better Together campaign final dinner scheduled for March 29th. And now the stories behind the headlines. 3 ballot issues for August 2025 primary up for vote by Prescott Council by Cindy Barks, The Daily Courier. 3 questions that are expected to go to Prescott voters in the August 2025 city primary will be back before the Prescott City Council this week for possible final decisions on the ballot language. The council will conduct 2 meetings on Tuesday, March 25th, a 1 p.m. study session and a 3 p.m. voting session. Both meetings will take place at Prescott City Hall, 201 North Montezuma Street. At the 3 p.m. voting session, the council could vote to send 3 issues, the 2025 general plan, an initiative for protection of open space, and the home rule option, to the voters in the August 5, 2025 city primary. The general plan and the open space initiative have been discussed extensively by the council and the public in recent months, and the home rule question was discussed at the last council meeting on March 11th. This week's meeting is the last opportunity for the council to approve the ballot language for the 3 items in order to get the issues on the August ballot. If the council does not approve the ballot language at Tuesday's meeting, the next vote would be the city's general election on November 4, 2025. The March 25th meeting will be the council's 3rd discussion of the draft 2025 general plan, a document that the city's general plan review committee worked on for more than 2 years before approving the final draft in December 2024. The draft then went to the Planning and Zoning Commission in early 2025 for public hearings and then to the City Council for review beginning in February. During the March 11th discussion, the Council appeared to reach a consensus on several portions of the draft general plan with several changes, although the consensus was not unanimous. After last week's meeting, the next step was for city staff to incorporate the council's suggested changes and corrections into the draft document. With a vote this week, the council would officially put the draft 2025 general plan on the August ballot, and Prescott voters would then make the final decision. Also up for a vote is a resolution and approval of ballot language for an open space charter amendment initiative that would add a new level of protection to city-owned open spaces. On February 25th, the council approved putting the issue on the August 2025 ballot and asked that the final ballot language be brought back for approval on March 25th. The council also appeared to support, at its March 11th meeting, putting the alternative expenditure limit home rule proposition on the August ballot. According to a city memo, the home rule option enables the citizens of Prescott, rather than the state, to set expenditure levels of the city through public hearings and council action each year for the next 4 years. Prescott voters have approved a similar option every 4 years since 1989. Tuesday's meeting will include the 2nd required public hearing on the home rule question, as well as a resolution by the council approving the ballot language for the August 2025 primary. In other action, the council will hear a presentation on the progress to date on a housing needs assessment that has been underway for several months. At the 1 p.m. study session, hear a departmental overview presentation from the police and fire departments, including areas of responsibility, budget overview, goals and objectives, and accomplishments. $46 million plan for Gurley Street site renovation, New Sheriff's Office Gets Board of Supervisors Support by Cindy Barks, The Daily Courier. Financing details are still to come, but a $46 million plan to renovate Yavapai County's old jail and criminal justice building on Gurley Street and build a new location for the sheriff's office received a strong endorsement from county officials this week. During a study session on Wednesday, March 19th, the Yavapai County Board of Supervisors heard the latest update on the need to renovate the 225 East Gurley Street building that serves as the Criminal Justice and Administration Center. The county's facilities department presented three options for moving forward, with costs ranging from $18 million for a renovation of the Gurley Street building to $68 million for a plan to sell the Gurley Street building and construct a criminal justice center at a new location, to a $46 million hybrid option that would involve renovating the Gurley Street building for the county attorney and adult probation departments and moving the sheriff's office and 911 dispatch to a new separate facility. Although the board did not vote on the matter during the study session, supervisors appeared supportive of the $46 million hybrid option, which several county officials said would provide the needed space for the sheriff's office with the least cost and disruption. The need for the renovations has been discussed for years, and in recent months, the board has discussed possible changes to the original plan from the early 2020s that had the county spending about $10 million to renovate the Gurley Street building that once served as the county jail. County Facilities Director Brandon Schultz told the board that a recent study on the county's space needs had indicated that the renovation of the Gurley Street building would not provide the space needed for growth in the sheriff's office. During a board meeting in December 2024, Sheriff David Rhodes had also emphasized that the existing plans did not satisfy the department's growing facility needs and that the county was moving too slowly in dealing with the issue. This week, Board Chairman Mary Mallory also said the county needs to move faster on providing more space for the criminal justice departments. She pointed out that the county had been discussing the matter since at least 2019, when she first got on the board. "So I want to get this done, and I would hope that we would have a definite direction today," Mallory said. Board Vice Chairman Brooks Compton agreed and said he supports the $46 million hybrid option in part because it would be the least disruptive to the sheriff's office. Schultz had explained that the $18 million renovation option had a number of disadvantages, including that it would require the departments to operate in the midst of a major renovation. He said preliminary construction testing had shown that the greatest impact from the construction would be felt by the sheriff's office and 911 dispatch. Rhodes also emphasized that point, noting that the 911 dispatch center would be the most affected by the construction noise. "Jackhammering out the concrete walls of the old jail is just not feasible to be done while you're answering 911 calls," Rhodes said. He said moving the sheriff's office and dispatch center one time to a new facility before the start of the renovations to the Gurley Street building would be the easiest for his department. Schultz explained that the hybrid option would involve about 2 years of construction of the new facility for the sheriff's office and then another 2 years of renovations to the Gurley Street building. He added that the second option, the $68 million plan to sell the Gurley Street building and build a new criminal justice facility elsewhere, would have a number of disadvantages as well, including the higher cost, the likely slim buyer market for the large Gurley Street building, and the fact that the county attorney and adult probation departments would be located farther from the downtown courthouse. County Manager Maury Thompson cited a number of reasons for the delays that have occurred in the renovation project. He pointed out that prior to this year, the county had been dealing with a state-set expenditure limitation, which restricted spending above a limit, even if the revenue was on hand. In November 2024, the county took an issue to increase the expenditure limit to the voters, and the measure was approved. Thompson added that the previous plan for the renovation was more a concept than a solid plan. With the board's direction this week, Thompson said county officials would continue discussions on the details of the improvements, including the financing. Wednesday's presentation included information on the possible sale of county properties to help with the costs. It listed a 3.86-acre parcel in the town of Prescott Valley, as well as a possibility of selling a 16.8-acre parcel along Prescott Lakes Parkway to the city of Prescott. Our next step is to talk about financing options, Thompson said, adding that county staff would come back with a plan about cash versus bonding. Mallory said, "We have the direction for you. We're excited. We're going to make this happen. I look forward to our next board meeting." You're listening to the Prescott Daily Courier from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand. From our website, choose Broadcast Info and Audio, then On Demand. The Launchpad Better Together Campaign Finale Dinner, scheduled for March 29th, by Nancy Hudson, The Daily Courier. The Launchpad Teen Center's three-year Better Together campaign is reaching its finale, a chance for 200 people to share a meal and debate with random dinner companions on controversial topics in a spirit of open-minded curiosity that encourages sharing of honest but respectful opinions. In a time when too many people of all generations are pitted against one another over everything from the state of public education and border patrols to abortion and social media freedoms, this teen-led campaign is credited with pushing the greater Prescott community to think differently about their neighbors' political affiliation, ethnic and religious backgrounds, age or gender, and embrace opinions that may be a far match from their own. On Saturday, March 29th, the Launchpad Teen Center will host its fourth and final free community dinner from 4 to 8 p.m. at the Yavapai Prescott Indian Tribe Gathering Center, 530 East Merritt Street in Prescott. The Mexican-style dinner will be catered by La Panchada. Reservations can be made through this link, givethelaunchpadteencenter.org. Expected to be the largest of the dinners hosted to date, the first with 80 guests and the third with 140, this dinner will be organized somewhat differently, with the topic assigned to a table rather than guests selecting their own, explained Launchpad Teen Advisory Council President Sophia Brown. As in the past, the guest seating is random so that people are encouraged to mingle and interact with those that they have never met before. The dinner format is a buffet style, with teen and adult table hosts helping to facilitate the conversation with the use of the Better Together guidebook distributed to all of the guests. The TAC team 2 years ago created a guidebook that offers tips for how to engage in difficult conversations in a civil fashion. The book provides examples, including recommendations for timeouts or reaching the conclusion a particular conversation needs to come to a close. A key part of all these dinners has been the core endeavor of the campaign: respectful conversation that does not seek to change anyone's mind, but rather appreciates that people can see things differently on any given topic, yet still maintain a cordial relationship with common ground in other unexpected ways. From Brown's perspective, and that of the center's teen leaders, is to showcase to the greater community that people of diverse beliefs can enjoy a meal together. No one opinion should be viewed as superior to another. Rather, an ability to be open offers a chance for better and more honest communication and recognition that, just like an ice cream shop, this community benefits from a plentiful supply of flavors. The center's Youth Leadership and Opportunities Director, Joy Goff, said this campaign is all about offering a safe place for people to be heard, regardless of where they might stand on any given issue. She said it's all about forging a true community where all voices are valued and all people are treated with respect, regardless of their differences. This is why we're here, Goff said of inviting guests to tell their stories of their childhood or life experiences that have led them to forge their ideas and values, then ask them to listen to those of their dinner companions. We may not be in the same place, but we are still eating a meal together, she said. We can still find some common ground. She acknowledges, though, it's not always easy or comfortable. It's hard work, Goff said. No matter where people may stand politically or how their family background or lifestyles may have influenced their thinking on various issues, Goff said when people leave these dinners, the hope is each sees themselves as part of a shared humanity. We all want our communities to thrive and assure that our children have opportunities for the future, she said. Brown and her team of teen leaders hope these dinners spark a chain reaction where individuals take what they've learned and spread it to others as more communities embrace their members' unique talents and perspectives. In the years ahead, Brown and Goff said the Launchpad hopes to generate collaboration with other nonprofits and community groups to continue hosting annual dinners intended to build upon the campaign's motto that all people and places are better together. Arizona Community Foundation of Yavapai County Regional Director Lisa Sahady could not be more proud of what this project has created across the greater Prescott area. More than 1,000 people were surveyed for topics of conflict. The TAC team wrote and produced the Guidebook of Principles to Follow when Seeking Common Ground on Difficult Topics. Numerous individual families hosted small group dinners to tackle such topics, and some 500 community members have participated in the community dinners. The impact of this campaign will clearly reverberate beyond this initial project, she noted. In 2022, the foundation awarded the Launchpad just over $100,000 to initiate this campaign. Fantastic, Sahady said of the work that has been invested into ensuring the citizenry and leaders in Greater Prescott area and Yavapai County are better together. As for the dinners, Sahady said each one has proved better than the next, with Brown stating each one is evaluated so as to determine how to build upon what has been learned so as to improve and include more voices for the next dinner. Sahady said her hope is this becomes a model for other communities who can then make it their own. These teens are our future leaders, and they have demonstrated through this campaign that we are in great hands, she concluded. Public comment sought on documents for Gold Bullion Mine Cleanup Project. Documents about the cleanup plan for the Gold Bullion Mine near Cherry are available for public review and comment. The Gold Bullion Mine is an abandoned mine located on the Verde Ranger District of the Prescott National Forest near Cherry. Investigation at the site showed that past mining operations left over 1,400 cubic yards of mine waste material containing heavy metals that pose a potential risk to human health and the environment. Dilapidated wooden structures, open mine features, concrete foundations, and an open water well also pose physical safety threats to site visitors. Copies of the Draft Engineering Evaluation Cost Analysis, EECA, and the administrative record upon which it is based are available digitally or at local Forest Service offices in Camp Verde or Prescott. Contact Francis Alvarado at 928-301-0615 for an appointment to view these documents in person. The EECA is also available online at the Forest Service Southwestern Region website. The EECA was prepared under the Forest Service's authority derived from Section 104 of the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act, CERCLA, Title 42, United States Code, Section 9604, and Federal Executive Order 12580, and is consistent with the National Oil and Hazardous Substances Pollution Contingency Plan, NCP, as found at Title 40, Code of Federal Regulations, Part 300. The purpose of the EECA is to present a detailed analysis of environmental response action alternatives that can be used for decision-making. The report also includes a discussion of regulations and information on background conditions. The EECA describes alternatives for an environmental response action, remedy, under CERCLA. Alternatives analyzed in the EECA include 1. No action, 2. Hotspot removal and on-site containment, excavation and consolidation of only the most contaminated areas, 3. Full removal and on-site consolidation, excavation and consolidation of all contaminated areas, and 4. Excavation and off-site disposal. The recommended alternative for the remediation of impacted material is alternative 3, full removal and on-site consolidation. The public is encouraged to comment on the recommended alternative as well as all the other alternatives presented in the EECA, or to suggest other alternatives. Written input and comments will be accepted until close of business on April 25, 2025. The Forest Service will prepare a written response to significant written public comments. Please send your written comments and input to Haley Stock, Assistant Regional Environmental Engineer, Southwestern Regional Office, 333 Broadway Boulevard Southeast, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87102, or via email to haily.stock@usda.gov. Parents of students with disabilities fearful of cuts as Trump dismantles Department of Education, by Samuel Travis, Cronkite News, Washington. Parents of students with disabilities, along with their teachers and advocates, were left wondering what comes next after President Donald Trump directed Secretary of Education Linda McMahon to dismantle her department on Thursday. Arizona schools received about $227 million in federal funds last year for special education, according to state data. The grants are distributed by the Federal Department of Education under the Individuals with Disability Education Act, or IDEA. It's unclear if the funding would still come from that department as it's dismantled, and especially if it's fully eliminated. Trump said core functions, including special education programs, would be preserved in full, but redistributed to various other agencies and departments. Education leaders and other critics expect cuts, though, and families that rely on services the funds provide are seeking reassurance. "They're all worried," said Paul McDonald, a former school superintendent in Arizona who works as a consultant for parents of children with disabilities. "What's going on at the federal level to this all is causing a lot of anxiety." Nationwide, 7.5 million students receive special education and related services under the Federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, according to the National Center for Education Statistics. That's about 15% of the public school population. Arizona had 141,000 students with disabilities in the 2022-2023 school year, according to the State Department of Education. Most students with an Individual Education Plan, or IEP, have a learning disability, autism, a speech or language impairment, or some other health impairment. Services and accommodations can include occupational, physical, or speech therapy, extended time to complete assignments, written backup to oral instructions, shorter assignments, audiobooks, and assistive devices. McDonald said state law should ensure that students don't lose services, but he is concerned that local schools aren't equipped to deal with some of the funding decisions that could eventually fall to them. "All we're doing is pushing the burden for these services to the state and these taxpayers. Aren't we then having to do it state by state?" he said. A Phoenix area advocate, Shannon Wilkie, is telling parents to get any pending paperwork done sooner rather than later and get as much in writing as you possibly can in case of procedural changes or slowdowns at the federal level. "Everyone's kind of up in arms about what could happen," she said, adding that the system is already strained. "Any reduction in federal education funds and schools are going to struggle even more to provide the mandated services." Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Horn welcomed Trump's move, saying he hopes the funding Congress provides for education will be controlled at the state level and not by bureaucrats in Washington. We can do a much better job than they can do. They're mostly an irritant in our communications, Horn said Thursday in an interview with Cronkite News. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said Thursday that critical functions of the Federal Education Department would not be cut. Advocacy groups and parents remain worried. Among other impacts, Trump's actions will be taking away special education services for students with disabilities, National Education Association President Becky Pringle said Wednesday ahead of the announcement. That's all the time we have for the Prescott Daily Courier. For Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, I'm volunteer reader Catherine Hammond. Thanks for listening.